Good afternoon, everyone. It's time for Northland Views from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today I will be reading from the Navajo Times and related papers. Your reader is Bethany Williams, filling in for Mary McCrory. From the April 18th edition of the Navajo Times, History in the Making. Council honors Diné women who serve as tribal council leaders by Jan Michael Patterson, or maybe Jan Michael Patterson. The 25th Navajo Nation Council on Tuesday recognized women leaders who serve the Navajo people through the Navajo Nation Council. I would like to say thank you to the women who joined us here today, said Delegate Eugenia Charles Newton. This is a momentous occasion. It's history in the making, and I'm so glad that we have young children to witness that. This is the first time we're honoring women that served in this very chamber through the many years this government had been established. We are honored to have them sit on the council floor with us, to be part of this day, to be recognized. The Navajo are a matrilineal society, and the women are the center of the family teaching to love, lead, and nurture. I ask everyone here right now to think of a woman who has meant something to you, who has been there for you, Charles Newton said. Women are important, and these women here today are so important to our government and what we have become. They are so important, they laid that foundation for many of us here. Charles Newton and Speaker Crystalyn Curley shared the idea of honoring past women leaders during the spring session because the season is a sign of renewal as life is coming back to the vegetation. I'm honored to be standing with the first woman speaker in the 100 years of our government, said Charles Newton. Chief Justice Joanne Jayne and Vice President Richelle Montoya joined them. The delegates and audience applauded as Curley leaned to give Charles Newton a side hug. This council chamber is blessed to have this many women today, she said. Curley gave insight in Navajo on the duties and responsibilities that women have at home and in the community. I believe that women have the capability to not only be leading our home, but also our nation and communities, Curley said. Acknowledging that it has been 76 years since a Navajo woman first served as a council delegate. Curley extended an invitation to all women delegates to join them on the floor as certificates of recognition were distributed. The Azan Natani recognized are Lilikai Julian Neal, Nageji Oho Encino and Counselor, 1946 through 52, Annie Dodge Waunika, Clogeto Wide Ruins, 1951 through 63, Bahazoni Begay, Coal Mine Canyon, 1959 to 63, Nancy Jensen, Cameron, 1959 to 63, Della Oliver, Tolikan, 59 to 63, Mabel P. Hesusi, Nageezi Counselor Oho Encino, 1963-71, Leslie Martinez, Nageezi, 1971-75, Edith Yazzie, St. Michael's, 1983-86, Rosalind D. John, Chichilta, 1987-91, Marie F. Neswood, St. Michael's, 1991-95. Carolyn M. Tome, Tohatchi and Coyote Canyon, 91-95. Ulysses Yazzie, Indian Wells, White Cone, 91-95. Genevieve Jackson, Shiprock, 91-99. Annie B. Deschini, Bread Springs Church Rock, 1991-2003. Marlene Thomas of Many Farms, 1995-99, Julie M. Mose, For Crystal, 95-99. Lenora Y. Fulton, Forked Defiance, 95-99. Christina Pacci, For Alamo, 1999-2003. Lula A. Jackson, 1999-2003. Orlando Smith Hodge. Cornfields, Clagheto Wide Ruins, 1999-2011. Lena Mannheimer, Tsa Beacon, Nazis An, 2003-2007. Laverne Wagner, Pueblo Pintado, Torreon, White Horse Lake, 2003-2007. Alice W. Benali of Crown Point, 2003-2007. Evelyn Akothley, Baudouet Gap, Cameron Coppermine, 2003-2011. Harriet K. Bessenti, Manuelito, Rock Springs, Sayato, 2003-2011. Hope McDonald Lone Tree, of Coal Mine Canyon in Tuba City, 2003-2011. Ida M. Nelson, for Red Rock, 2003-2011. Alice M. White, Chilchinbeto and Cayenta, 2003-2007. Glo Jean Totticini, of Shiprock, 2003-2011. Catherine Benali, Denohotso Chilchinbeto and Cayenta, from 2003-2015. And Charlene So, Aneth, Mexican Water, Red Mesa, Tecnos Pos, and Tolhican, 2009-2023. That was Council Honors Diné Women Who Served as Tribal Council Leaders. Navajo Nation Vice President details sexual harassment and misogyny in office. This is by Alexandra Wittenberg, writing for the Navajo Hopi Observer, published on the 23rd of April, 2024. During the week of the 2024 Navajo Nation Spring Council session, Rochelle Montoya exposed the reality of her struggles as the first female vice president of the Navajo Nation, including disparities between her and President Boone Nigrin, bullying in the office, and little help from the executive branch. After helping to lead a sexual awareness walk on the council's first day, April 15th, and honoring strong Diné women elected leaders April 15th, Montoya took to Facebook Live to reveal that she was sexually harassed within the office of the president and vice president during an August 2023 staff meeting. It's been 74 years since our first female was elected into Navajo Nation public office, and I'm here to tell you that not much has changed, she said during the emotional hour-and-a-half self-produced video. Although she was not physically hurt, Montoya said the incident had a detrimental impact on her. I was made to feel I had no power to leave the room. I was made to feel that what I was trying to accomplish didn't mean anything, that I was less than, she said. Montoya said the incident occurred during an exceptionally challenging period, coinciding with her separation from her former husband, Olson Chi, that same month. I prayed about it. I toughed it out. I said, nope, I got to keep going. I told my people I was going to keep going, and every day I was going to give them my best, and so I did, she said. Montoya said she wrote a statement about the harassment with the encouragement of her friend John Sozi, who previously led Nigrin's Missing and Murdered Indigenous People Task Force. Montoya then brought her statement to a meeting with several staff members. They asked me, what do you want the outcome to be of this? She said. My response was, I did not want to be alone with this person ever, and I don't want him to talk to me or apologize or try to explain it or anything. Not long after, the Office of the President and Vice President held an all-staff sexual harassment prevention training that Montoya said was sparked by the incident, but Montoya said she felt that her perpetrator's identity was being protected by the organizers. A few times during the video, Montoya said she was nervous and got teary-eyed. She said she knows of 25 executive staff members that have left Nigrin's administration. I just want to say to those people that have expressed that sexual assault and harassment is what happened to them, that I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I didn't come out with my story sooner, or at the time, she said, that possibly you would not have been assaulted or made to feel sexual harassment. I take that, and I apologize to those who went through it and have left because of it. And I pray for you that you're able to heal and move forth. During the April 15th council session, Navajo Nation delegate Eugenia Charles Newton and other delegates asked Montoya some point-blank questions about her responsibilities as vice president and more. As Montoya detailed the disparities between her and Nygren within the office, the president sitting next to her remained hunched over his papers and did not turn to face her. "Right now, I've been struggling with issues within our office." Montoya said there's no document that lays out the vice president's roles, but early in the term she had a meeting with Nygren to outline her duties. Montoya said she's been focusing on chapter governments, missing and murdered indigenous relatives, advocacy for responsible pet care, and customer service within the Navajo Nation Department. "I'm so proud of the work I've done so far on behalf of my people with my staff, Josie Bowman," Montoya said. "Josie's capacity is as my assistant, my scheduler, and my security staff." Montoya said she's received assistance outside of the Navajo Nation office from legislators in the states of Arizona and Utah, as well as cities like Santa Fe and Washington, D.C. "The reason I have many of these people out there to assist me is because I don't have the help within the executive branch," Montoya said. "We have division directors, we have executive staff assistants that work with the office of the president. I do get a little bit of help once in a great while when I ask for it, but most of the time I don't, because of the negative impact that happens to these individuals if they do assist me." Montoya said after she meets with staff, Nygren questions them about their discussions with her. On the Facebook live stream, April 16th, Montoya went into more detail. Montoya estimated 25 employees have left the Navajo Nation Executive Office since Nygren took office in January of 23. That includes 7 division directors. Montoya said the employees were either fired, resigned, or reassigned to other departments. She said she believes the reason many left was because of the toxic work environment. "People on the staff are told, do not help the vice president. People on our staff are told, do not tell the vice president what I said to you," Montoya said. "Jobs are being threatened if they are helping me." Montoya said she's spoken to some employees who asked to remain anonymous because of fear of retaliation. "These employees come to me and tell me, I was called into the president's office. I was asked if I was a spy for the vice president. I was asked, why are you helping the vice president? What does she want? What does she say?" Montoya said, "It's sad." Montoya also said Nygren has come between her and her family. She said her sister, Vivian Montoya, began working in the office of the president and vice president in April of 23, after Nygren asked her to be his Eastern Agency representative and education liaison. Montoya said, shortly after, the president began sharing with Vivian about Rochelle's job performance. "Apparently he started complaining about me," Montoya said. Montoya was left angry and frustrated. Montoya also explained she is continuously disrespected by 2 key members of Nygren's team, a male and a female. More than 27,000 people have viewed Montoya's Facebook video. Charles Newton, who was one of the delegates that originally questioned Montoya at the council meeting, left several comments while Montoya went live, saying she was sorry about the harassment and commended Montoya for her honesty. On April 18th, Navajo Nation Speaker Crystalyn Curley released a statement about Montoya's sexual harassment allegations that were brought forth via the council meeting and social media. "As I became aware of these allegations, I invited all members of the council to come together on Wednesday, April 17th, to discuss the issues and seek their input," Curley said. "Based on the discussion, there was a general consensus that the allegations warrant an independent investigation." Curley said this marks the 2nd recent sexual misconduct allegation within the office of the president and vice president, and the council continues to await the outcome of the federal investigation in the first case. "The nature of these allegations compels us to act swiftly to gather the facts and seek accountability. We must proceed assertively and cautiously to ensure a fair investigation," Curley said. As the Speaker of the Council, and also as a mother, I strongly condemn harassment and abuse in any form. Nygren released his own statement on the morning of April 19th, quoting Curley in part, adding, I support and welcome an independent, fair, and transparent investigation, and one that the Navajo people can have full confidence in. Nygren refrained from addressing any of Montoya's concerns or acknowledging the frequent mention of his name as a factor behind many of those concerns. It's not clear if the investigation will just focus on the sexual harassment Montoya faced or delve into the issues of workplace toxicity that Montoya revealed. This is a unique and unprecedented situation brought forth by my vice president, Nygren wrote. I trust the Navajo Nation Department of Justice will rely on concepts of Navajo fundamental law, which are grounded in concepts of K'e and Nabikiete. Let us all continue to pray for unity within the Navajo Nation government and for the people. Montoya told the council she struggled with how to bring up the issues she has been facing. I do not want anybody to say, see, this is what would happen if we had women in leadership. And that was Navajo Nation Vice President Details Misogyny in Office. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with Northland Views. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been bringing you audio access to print information for over 40 years. You can visit the website sunsounds.org to listen to our live streams or to find individual episodes on demand. But you can now do both on the dedicated Sun Sounds smartphone app for Apple and Android, which can be found in the appropriate app stores. Here's an article from the White Mountain Independent that is about a Diné person, horse gentler Leland Grass, reconnecting the Diné with what is being forgotten, by Tony Gibbons, published on April 19, 2024. For Leland Grass, Navajo horse gentler, 2013 was a pivotal turning point in his life. It was the year the Navajo Nation Council passed a resolution signed into law by President Ben Shelley allowing the roundup, sale, and slaughter of feral abandoned horses from the Navajo Indian Reservation. It was also the year that the traditionalist elders and medicine people of the Navajo Nation gathered with youth and formed Nohoka Diné Earth Surface People, passing a resolution 4 months later on August 26, 2013, in opposition to the roundup and sale of Navajo horses, especially to kill buyers. Since 2013, I've spoken against the horse roundups. I speak not only for myself, but for the Nohoka Diné, but more importantly, I speak for the Navajo horse, to remind you of the time our horses were sacred to the Navajo people, said Grass. We have songs, prayers, and ceremonies that are performed in honor of the horse. There was a time when the Diné were a horse nation. The Navajo people and horses were inseparable companions, sharing a deep sense of friendship and understanding. Our horses were an important part of our families, and we were a part of their herd. In 2014, Diné for Wild Horses was created to revive the sacred legacy and spiritual connection of the majestic animal that has enabled the Navajo to survive in a land that could be both beautiful and barren. As a child growing up in Betatakin near Kayenta, with the only transportation in a wagon pulled by mules or on the back of a horse, the world of horses and humans was common for Grass. I grew up around animals when I was a kid, he said. We had dogs, chickens, sheep, cattle, and horses. Grass learned about riding and training horses and mules from his mom, Mary Jim Teamster. My grandpa, Jim Teamster, was a teamster and a beauty way medicine man in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s on a wagon train that carried soft and hard goods, food, and mail from Flagstaff to the Four Corners and on to Farmington before returning. His route carried him past all the trading posts, many that are now only ruins. He had lots of wagons and mules. The work carried his last name, Teamster. "He taught my mom to work with the horses and mules," said Grass. It was not uncommon for Grass's mom and friends to gather wild donkeys and mules and train them. Back in the late 60s, we had a wagon and a couple of horses. I remember those days vividly, sitting beside my mom as we trotted along. She would hand me the reins, and suddenly, as a kid, I felt like I owned the world, said Grass. Living with no electricity or running water, horses were more than companions. They were a lifeline for survival. From trips to the local well, where 10-gallon jugs were filled, to harvesting food and gathering herbs for healing and ceremonies, horses were a part of that life. They were our wheels, our engines, said Grass. When my mom joined forces with my stepdad, a medicine man, she carried on caring for animals, although we traded the wagon for a modern vehicle. But she made sure I still had a horse, said Grass. She introduced me to the hand technique later with ropes, but I started with bareback riding. Even as I started boarding school at 6 or 7, returning home in summers, the lessons continued, caring for animals, tending to crops, and participating in ceremonies. I had an uncle, my stepfather's brother, who was mute and deaf. His only communication was by sign language, Grass continued. He took care of himself and lived with his animals. I would watch how he would communicate with the horses with no words, and the horses always paid attention to him. His body language spoke to them. That was his medicine and his ability. By the time Grass turned 8, he received his first saddle, a gift from his stepfather. Whether practicing stunts or riding for the joy of connection, Grass quickly learned the horse reacts to your body, and that's where he will go. That was what my mom was trying to tell me by body language. I didn't need to train them. They already knew. I remember thinking then that everyone on the reservation knew about horses. It was just life for us. I didn't realize the depth of our connection to these animals until later, Grass said. After completing boarding school, Grass ventured into the modern lifestyle, taking his first job in Utah while he pursued vocational training. In 2006, his parents fell ill. I returned home to be with them, said Grass, and it was then that I learned the Navajo government was considering getting rid of our horses. It baffled me. Why would they want to let go of something so integral to our heritage and survival? Then I realized a lot of those people I thought were taught about horses had grown out of it. Nobody was teaching it, and a lot of horses were roaming around. The people weren't doing anything about it, continued Grass. Grass reached out to the government, but quickly realized that when they'd made a law, it was not to be touched by the people. He began speaking out, trying to raise awareness whenever possible, but it wasn't until August 26, 2013, when Nohoka Diné passed their resolution, that another dream was realized, a dream to teach the Navajo people about horses and the power they bring to heal and restore connection. Diné for Wild Horses was born. Grass spent 2 days a week traveling around the reservation doing seminars, helping people to understand how to speak horse, how to start a colt, or gentle an older horse. A few Navajo horsemen carry different methods, but none teach through traditional acknowledgement with horses and humans. As I was trying to raise awareness, I realized that my own people had lost their horse heritage, said Grass. I started going around the Navajo reservation, teaching my people how to handle wild horses, and how to know the difference between wild, feral, and domestic. I began to use traditional equine therapy to heal. A family might be traumatized by alcohol and domestic violence and suicide. I talk about it at my seminars, said Grass. I trained the horses for free. Sometimes I would train up to 6 horses, and the next day I trained more. I did it because I wanted both the owner and the horse to be happy. There are many times the horse talks with me and tells me about the owner's home and the troubles that are there. I connect that person with their horse so the bad things will go away. At one of his seminars, a man approached Grass. The man's dad had passed away, and the horse that he'd ridden for years had become unapproachable. The horse doesn't want anything to do with us, not even my kids, said the man. We want to connect with him, but he won't let us. Grass told the man to bring the horse and his kids to the seminar the next day. Sure enough, that horse wanted nothing to do with any of us, said Grass. The day was very windy, and the flags Grass had mounted on the corral panels were flapping hard. My corral has an American flag on the north side, a Navajo Nation flag on the east, and an Arizona flag on the south. I use the noise the flags make for the horses. When you have a horse that hasn't been touched, they will be afraid and run around, but then they get used to it. With the wind whipping the flags, the horse still refused to let a human near him. Grass continued to gently push into the horse's space. I kept going to him. The wind was at my back, and I could hear the flags flapping. And then something changed, said Grass. The horse was standing under the American flag, and as I reached my hand toward his chin, I felt his whisker. Then I noticed it was calm around me. My hair stopped flopping. I heard the wind that was behind me where the two flags were still flapping. I touched the horse and touched him again. There was no wind where the horse and I stood with the American flag. Grass had the man come in and touch the horse. Then he showed him how to halter him without a rope. Grass repeated the process with the son and daughter. Then he asked the man, "When did your dad die?" "It was last year," said the man. "So the horse was pinned in a corral for a year?" asked Grass. "Yeah," was the reply. "The horse told me your dad was a veteran," said Grass. The man nodded yes. The moment ended, with the horse and family understanding how to move forward. From 2014 until the pandemic hit in 2020, the momentum of the seminars was growing, with Grass setting up horse competitions that were building to a championship that was shut down because of COVID. For the last 2 years, Grass has been working to start the seminars, to restart the seminars, that is. With the cost of gas and food on the rise, he's charging to do the seminars both on and off tribal lands, and welcomes a chance to share with people the healing power of connecting with their horses. We train people to be colt starters and horse gentlers. Our seminars are for both horses and people. From round pen work and trailer training to building trust with people using gentling techniques. We teach the humans the horse language and how to communicate with our horses and cultural lessons. We also provide therapy clinics and outreach programs tailor-made to heal children with autism, veterans with PTSD, and domestic violence survivors, said Grass. For all who love horses, Diné for Wild Horses will help people connect with their spiritual legacy with the Navajo horse. This is the place they call home, said Grass. Our horses have roamed freely since they were born, and they possess the same fundamental right to life that we, the five-fingered ones, do. For more information on Diné for Wild Horses, email Grass at sacredforce, that's SACRED4S, at hotmail.com. And that was Horse Gentler Leland Grass. You've been listening to Northland Views from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams in for Mary McGrory. Coming up next, it's the Arizona Republic.